Hello, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jacob Rudner, Carlos Collazo, in what was positively the worst setup we've ever had for one of these. We're going live, though, but I don't think anyone's going to complain because we want to talk to you about day one of the MLB draft, which was both completely as expected and completely unexpected, I felt like, at the same time. Carlos, let's start with the expected. Chalk at the top.
Rock chalk.
Rock chalk.
At the top.
Rock Chalowski, we will clarify. Rock Chalowski. I just want to make sure that's clear. Rock Chalowski. But Rock Chalowski goes 1-1, the UCLA shortstop, as predicted in the mock, but also as kind of had been the, like, at the expectation, but obviously at just a slight level, but at the expectation month after month after month.
Right.
Grady Emerson, too. Like, was there anything that surprised you at the top? Or is it, nope, it went chalk and that's there wasn't any intrigue to it?
First four picks, I think, like, everyone would have expected that. Like, nothing was shocking. Even five, Derek Curiel to the Pirates. Like, we'd heard some rumblings, and Curiel is not super far off the board in that range. I think it's Zion Rose probably at six. That was maybe the first kind of shocking pick, or, like, player that no one really would have expected. No one was projecting to go there. We'd heard some whispers of Zion Rose, but to think that that was the most likely pick. That one was interesting. And then we also thought it was going to be very hitter heavy at the top of the draft this year. It was exceptionally hitter heavy, maybe the most hitter heavy draft we've seen, I think, ever, historic, at least tied inside top 10. And I think going
and in the top 15, it was the most, because there had never been only one pitcher in the top 15 before.
And then the other theme that stood out to me as we were watching hitters come off the board and seeing some surprising picks like Jake Schaffner, I think at 20 to the Red Sox, maybe the biggest surprise in the first round. Sounds like the Red Sox got scooped a little bit in front of that pick, but every single hitter who was at the top of our board had great contact skills. A lot of the guys who didn't slid in this draft, I don't know, that feels like a little bit of a theme of the draft to me beyond, hey, so, like, the top three went top three.
Okay. And I want this for both of you, but I guess we'll start with Jacob. Like, you mentioned Zion Rose. Zion Rose was kind of the first, like, oh, surprise pick. But I do want to lay out that, like, that's one of those surprises where it's not that much of a surprise. If you look at our rankings, you may go, oh, he went significantly higher. Mm-hmm. But we've been trying to emphasize over and over here, one team may have Drew Burris here, and another team may have Zion Rose, and another team may have Derek Curiel. There wasn't this massive gap of separation, mm-hmm. whereas there was if you said, oh, I'm going to take one of these guys over Grady Emerson or Von Lackey. Like, Zion Rose is not a... wow, that was an out-of-the-blue pick at that pick, is it?
No, I don't think so. And I think that, like you just said, one of the things that was a theme going into this draft was just how variable picks like 8 through about 30 or 40 could have been. You really could have justified any order. And to the Zion Rose point, we did know that Zion Rose was somebody who had late helium. He was somebody who we really liked going into this draft. He has a lot of the skills that play at the top of the board. And I think we also saw that there was kind of a premium on athleticism at the top of this year's draft, of which Zion Rose has ample. And so that is another reason why I think it's not really that crazy of a pick at all. I think that if you're, you know, really going down the board, it would be a little bit more noticeable. But this felt within range for a draft that did have a lot of murkiness beyond the top four or five picks.
So Carlos, like, with that pick and some of the others in that range, were there any of those, like you said, okay, we know that the Red Sox pick, that's a different level.
Right.
Before that, was there any others where you're like, oh, that surprised me a lot? Or was it more of like, these were guys, again, the murky middle of that first round was always going to be murky?
Yeah, I think up until 20, everything felt like we expected this draft to feel. Even Jacob Lombard sliding to 14, like, we had heard some rumblings, like, Jacob Lombard is probably the most likely of that top six to slide. He was. I think he's the one with the most significant swing and miss questions in that grouping. Joe Rojas, turns out he really didn't slide that much. I mean, I know he was talked about as a potential pick in the first 10. Justin LeBron, he goes around kind of the range we expected him to go off the board in terms of his floor. I thought at the top it was kind of what we were thinking could happen in that range, if that makes sense.
So the pitchers, as you said, we did have Jackson Flora go 4, but then we just waited an awful long time to hear another pitcher's name.
We had Cole Hamels up there not being able to talk about players. We had Lance. I was waiting for Lance to do some work on the broadcast. He had no arms to talk about. It was very hitter heavy.
But then we did get to the pitchers in the, you know, not a run, but we did have a number of pitchers, especially when we got around pick 20.
Yep.
And I would say in this class, that feels actually logical in some ways, because we also kept talking about how this was a class where after a clear number one pitching prospect, Jackson Flora, after a clear number one on the high school side, Gio Rojas, but he's a high school pitcher, he's a lefty. The rest of it was guys who it was going to be a little bit of some teams thought this guy, some things teams think this guy, but none of them were really, we kept saying all year, who's going to claim the mantle of the college SP2, the second starter? And the answer is
no one.
Unclaimed. But well, you did see some names start to go off the board.
You did. I think Liam Peterson to the Guardians at 19 is a really interesting fit. Coleman Borthwick to the Padres at 21 makes a ton of sense for what they were doing. Cameron Flukie. You know what is interesting? All three of our preseason college pitchers, that Flora, Peterson, Flukie range, they were the first three college pitchers to come off the board. No one behind them, I guess, did enough this spring to give teams confidence that they're definitely the guy. And then the Carson Wiggins pick at 27 to the Mets. I'm sure you got, I know you like that pick,
I love it.
Jacob.
Yeah.
That was a fun one to me. Like, why do you like that Carson Wiggins pick?
Well, I just think the upside. Like, at that point in the draft, there are so few sure things. Like, right. You were saying on the broadcast today, and I thought it was a great point. There's really only a certain range of guys that you can go and feel reliably are going to go and be a starter or have starter traits even at that point in the draft. That's one of the most electric players available this year. I mean, it's a fastball when he's healthy that's up to 102. There's an electric slider in there. I mean, it's real stuff. And so the question is, if he's going to be healthy, how fast is he going to move?
Right.
I think the answer is potentially very quickly. And that was kind of the conversation about Carson Wiggins before the season. Like, we were talking about him, you and I, before the year as somebody who we thought could be easily a first-round pick. If he had even a slight opportunity to go and play towards the end of the year, he didn't get that chance, but he was still in the first round because I think that the starter potential, but really the stuff by itself is just so loud.
We got our first chat question. Chris Bavona is working the board here. So we've got Dominic Santarelli. How has he fell out of the first four rounds?
I don't know that Dominic Santarelli was ever guaranteed to go in that first round range. We had him ranked number 146 right now. I imagine if he doesn't go very early tomorrow, we're going to get excited about seeing what he can do with a metal bat at LSU. And I know Jay Johnson is probably very excited to not hear his name called right now to keep that elite class intact a little bit. But to say that like he fell out of the first four rounds to me would maybe indicate that like he was locked in to go in that range, where I don't necessarily think that was the case. If he's just kind of on that fringe for me, where if he did go on that in the top four, unsurprising. If he doesn't, also kind of unsurprising. I think there are some profile questions, maybe some swing and miss questions that would make people hesitant. And also, if he maybe had a really high price tag, maybe he wanted top two rounds money. If he didn't get that, all of a sudden, you don't feel like you can sign him. That could very easily have happened as well.
So, okay, we talked about, so at the top, we'll go a little bit further on that. Chulowski, Emerson, Lackey, Flora, Curiel, Zion Rose, we mentioned. Eric Booth to the Orioles, which was, again, that's a guy who was thought to be top tier. Drew Burris to the A's. AJ Gracia to the Braves. Ben Badler is, I'm sure, very excited about that pick.
Derek Curiel went a little bit earlier. Derek Curiel to go
early. And you did beat me on Burris, too. Burris went high, but we all had our
I have to take my loss, though, because Sawyer Strohsnyder may be one of the bigger fallers in this draft.
But goes back to, okay, so let's talk about this theme that you brought up earlier.
Yes.
If there's a theme of this that seemed to stand out, the theme is, if you are a position player who has swing and miss, has contact concerns, those players seem to fall even if they have big time power. Whereas if you had elite contact skills or viewed to be a plus hitter with questions about your power, those guys seemed to go a lot higher this year.
Yeah. And I wonder if teams are just now looking at the track record of guys that have a lot of swing and miss in college, maybe didn't hit for super high averages. Like, I'm looking down our list here and trying to see Jacob Lombard. We could focus in on college profiles maybe, because I think that's where it's more interesting to me, maybe more apparent. Justin LeBron has some hit risk, but I don't know that it was like pure contact risk to the same degree that some guys like Sawyer Strohsnyder or Caden Sorrell, who slipped a little bit further. And then you're looking at guys in the 20s like Trey Ebel, Carter Beck, who make a lot of contact, Taj Marchand, Landon Tomei, Tyler Spangler. Like, no one in the top 30, 35 picks really has significant swing and miss questions.
Daniel Jackson's probably your first guy just inside the top 40.
Right, yeah, 37 to the Rockies with their first pick. Then you start to see guys like Carson Tinney, Texas catcher who went 43 to the Twins. Some of those profiles started to be Rocco Maniscalco at 50, some swing and miss questions there. It did really seem like a class where you got punished pretty heavily if you had missed questions. Caden Sorrell goes number 62 to the Cubs. I think he has first round tools, first round athleticism. We ranked him inside the first round. And Sawyer Strohsnyder, 66 to the Brewers. If you're a Brewers fan, I'd be thrilled with this pick because I do think if he hits, and I think there's some reasons to buy into some improvements he could make at the next level, it's tremendous secondary tools and impact and upside. But it was interesting to see.
Another question we have here is will Noah Grindlinger, the Angels' first-round pick, be a two-way? He was announced as an outfielder. Again, that doesn't mean anything necessarily.
Yep. Jared Grindlinger,
yes, not Noah.
Were you guys surprised to not hear him announced as a two-way player? Because I kind of was. Even if I thought teams prefer him as a hitter, which I think they do, and Jacob, you can speak more to this, it feels like the two-way guys kind of always get announced as two-way guys, and maybe they'll...
Yeah, I was a little surprised you were to not hear them announce it both ways, just because it kind of leaves the option open, whereas this, right. It feels like you really shut it down.
Yeah,
like the path has been laid, but I do think that the future for him is right. With the bat in his hands, and so at the end of the day, is it that big of a deal? Is it, you know, really straying from what's going to ultimately happen? Probably not, but I do think that it was a little bit surprising. Yeah.
I will say, obviously, to talk about that Angels pick a little bit, and I see we also had a comment by someone saying that they liked what the Angels did, Krypton 18, I think, right there.
That was the Angels draft.
But I do think with the Angels, like, obviously, it's the first prep first pick since they went Jordan Adams 2018, Joe Adell 2017.
Yep.
A while ago. That's the Shohei Ohtani is joining the team era the Angels. So it's been a while for that. I do think, obviously, John Mozeliak's there, you know, so we do have a new head, interim head. But I think on top of that, I do think that there is at least some realization we're seeing that the Angels have come to a realization that their approach wasn't really working, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it did work with Zach Neto. It did work to some extent with some other guys like a Nolan Shanuel. He's been okay.
Right.
But what it hasn't done is like, given them any actual success
right.
Speeding these guys up. Tyler Bremner is on, seems like what I would describe as a much more traditional path developmentally this year. Hayden Alvarez, who's, I would say, one of the best developing young Angels prospects, is in low A, whereas Nelson Rotta was sent like, hey, you're going to Rocket City. I feel like that Grindlinger kind of adds to that this is a guy who's one of the youngest players in the draft class.
Right.
This is not you're going to speed him to the majors.
I was going to say, you're not going to speed the 17.2, I think it's his age on draft day.
You're
not speeding him to the majors. I really like the fact that the Angels have gone to what I would think is the best player available pick, kind of just not worrying about that ETA factor, because I do think it has led them to maybe some suboptimal picks. In the past, we had heard that they're associated with more high school profiles. I don't know that I'd necessarily thought it would be Grindlinger in particular, but I just think it's a fun pick to see from an organization that has been super college heavy. They were college heavy in the second, third, and fourth with Jaron Advincula, who I think that's good value at 45. I thought he could have gone in the back half of the first. Gavin Grahovic, in the third round. This is not my favorite profile, but at pick 81, I really like that.
Yeah. And but that's the guy who could have been a first rounder going into the year.
And Ryland Lujo as well in the fourth round. I think there are tools, defensive profile to like there. So I'm not sure who mentioned the Angels here, but I tend to agree. I like what they did this year.
I also think that, you know, to the point of the Angels and their affinity for proximity, it's not like they didn't get that today. I think they just appropriately, they had those guys in the right spots this year. Whereas I think in years past, we've seen them kind of reach for that in the first round. Whereas this year, to your point, you get a guy in Jared Grindlinger who's a very talented, very raw player, somebody who does need a little bit longer of a developmental runway. But you have Jaron Advincula, who's a no-doubt second baseman with one of the best hit tools in this class.
Yeah.
I don't foresee him getting much stronger or bigger in the sense that he's really going to change his game.
Move that guy quickly.
Exactly. I think Gavin Grahovic is a great example of somebody who could move fast. And Lujo, you know, there are some things to figure out defensively with him, but that's another guy who I think, offensively speaking, fits their fast-moving potential profile. And this year, I think that the value of those guys happened a little bit more appropriately.
I like this way of lining them up.
Yeah.
Next question is, thoughts on the Rangers getting Bumilla and Rojas? Brody Bumilla and Gio Rojas. So they get two prep lefties.
And not just those two. Let's not bury the – let's not –
So okay, that's the lead. That is the lead. So you're not burying the lead, but let's not bury the rest of the.
When I saw this, yeah. See, this is my brain fog of still not putting everything together. I was thinking Ruger Riojas.
No.
Not Gio Rojas.
Yeah, it's like, I know. So when you said not bury the lead, I'm like.
Yeah, that was
Gio Rojas is the lead.
But I will also say Connor Como in between
that. I love this.
Fan favorite. Yeah, this was a let's swing for the fences draft by the Texas Rangers. I like where they got Gio Rojas in the middle of the first round. I think that's very appropriate for his talent. Bumila getting him in the third round. This is one of the more terrifying profiles in the draft, but to get him in the third. And again, we say this over and over and over again. If you're taken in the first 10 rounds, we're expecting you to sign until we hear otherwise. Connor Como, a hitter I really like. I know Jacob really likes him as well.
I signed me up on him too.
I'll add JJ.
I mean, it's a beautiful swing.
Yeah, it is tremendous. And then Hudson Calhoun to round it out. This is a lovely upside draft for me. I like it a lot. Jacob.
So Alex Speer, BA, but you know, Boston Globe, but also BA Red Sox correspondent. Brody Bumila tells Maddie Sports that Rangers will sign him for first round money. He'll undergo Tommy John surgery to start his pro career.
So first round money, that's at least $3 million we're looking at here. Could be a little bit more
I'm gonna tell you right now, I don't think Gio Rojas is taking a haircut.
Nope. That would be surprising. Slot value for the 16th overall pick is just over $5 million. So maybe the Rangers are gonna have to dip into the senior demographic here tomorrow.
We got a slam dunk easy one here. Question for the Baseball America folks. Why did Rintaro Sasaki drop out of day one?
That was rude.
But he was never going to go in the first round. There's never been a day in Rintaro. Like, this is one of the guys who, it's nothing against Rintaro Sasaki.
Respectfully.
He was one of the stars of the high school circuit in Japan. But he is a first baseman with limited defensive value, limited base running value. And the offensive impact is not.
Yeah.
To be that profile, you need to be like a guy who's a stud hitter with stud power, and he's not shown that. So we don't expect him to be drafted, to be honest. Like,
we didn't rank him on the 500.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to some other questions.
Thoughts on the Twins day one of the draft.
Twins. Okay, let's pull up their board. Again, I'm still, I don't know how quickly or how long it takes you guys to like process the
I have to look at it.
So Twins draft, third overall, they grab Von Lacky. Love that.
Expected.
Just kind of doing
But I will say expected, but at the same time, one where if they didn't do that, I would probably like it a lot less if they didn't. You know, like you had, if you went in another direction, I don't get cute about it. Von Lacky.
Yeah, yeah. No, I really
so like thumbs that. Up.
Yeah. Doubling down on catchers, Carson Tinney at 40.
Okay, that is a little weird though.
No, I don't mind it at all. I think that's great value. Brett Renfro with their comp pick at 74. Ethan Waxman, third round. At pick 79, and then Tommy Lepore, TCU. I honestly think this is like,
I really like it.
Played fairly straight up, like nothing of this board here. As we're looking at it, I'm like, oh, they like really went off the board here. Like it looks like they just took a lot of players that we think of as good values of those.
And I would also add to JJ's point about the potential weirdness of taking two catchers up top. Mm-hmm. I actually think that there is a decent chance, and it's way too early to really know that any of this stuff, but that one of those two guys probably doesn't end up a catcher.
Right.
And that could very well be Von Lacky. Like, one of the things that we heard about Von Lacky throughout the entirety of the cycle was that part of his extreme value was the fact that he would be a good prospect and player if he wasn't a catcher. So in a world where catching doesn't work out, and JJ, you can attest to this, catching is hard. I think that Von Lacky is in a really good spot, and you bring in somebody like Carson Tinney, who, if you can figure it out with him behind the plate or not, you do bring in a supercharged bat who brings a lot of power. So it gives you options.
I will just politely disagree, though, that yes, but if one of them is going to end up not at catcher, I think it's Tinney, because I think Lacky, I don't care if a player who can catch can play other positions. If you're a great catcher, that's where I want to see you play. Because it's so hard. Now, you're right. If he fails to do it, if our projecting catchers from the amateur to the pro level is very hard, but he was considered like an elite defender in college. I expect him to be the catcher. But at the same time, the other thing is you also do need two. Like, even if both these guys perform, the Orioles have, have some... The Orioles having Adley Rutschman and Samuel Basayo at catcher on the same team is not a problem for them.
Yeah.
let's say you one of them DHs and one of them catches, and you keep both of them relatively fresh, and people, teams don't seem to want their catcher to catch 120 plus games now.
Yeah.
So, so that's kind of a, you know, an interesting kind of thought on that. We have a lot of other teams that
I'm sure we have a ton of good questions.
Okay. Thoughts. We'll go this one next. Thoughts. We're going to do probably a number of teams, but thoughts on Yankees day one draft. So let's go to the Yankees.
Let's pull up the Yankees here. My brain's not working. You Thank you, Jacob. Yeah. Hunter Dietz at pick 35 with their first round pick that was lowered. Sean Duncan in the second round at 63. Brendan Brock in the third round at number 99. And then Paul Contreras in the fourth round. I really like the Sean Duncan pick here in the second round. I think if he didn't have his late injury in May, they maybe don't get a chance to take him at the 63rd pick here. I am a little more scared of Hunter Dietz, but I acknowledge the like power stuff that he has.
I like it at 35.
And then Brendan Brock is really just this dynamic athlete. This is another one. Like if he doesn't catch, you could still be center field. Really good defensive yeah, exactly. profiles with him. So yeah, what do you think, Jacob?
Well, I mean, they got a 70 runner in Brock, and I think that the value in the third round of somebody who's either going to end up catching or being a very productive, very athletic outfielder with range yeah. to the alleys is a pretty rare selection for mm-hmm. that range. And I actually will say the Paul Contreras pick is a sneaky good one. He was somebody who was kind of a late riser on the West Coast, kind of a pop-up name out of Cal State Fullerton. Yep. There's power. It's good swing decisions. He's got a decent feel to hit. I do think it's a corner bat at the end of the day. But again, in the fourth round, to be getting some very solid tools like that, somebody who proved it and sustained production at the Division I level for a long time like he did, it's a good draft. And I agree with you. I think Sean Duncan was one of the sneaky picks of the day.
Again, in Dietz, like at 35, I'm fine with it. Like if it had been 25, I'd have been mm-hmm. a little more concerned. Yeah. But 35, you're getting a power, you know, power arm. And if he ends up like starter, great. And if he ends up as a reliever,
the slider is pretty electric too.
Okay. I think we probably should do this one. Thoughts on White Sox draft. I'm not gonna give you a grade. We're not gonna give you a grade before we even see the whole draft.
Even half the draft.
Yeah, we haven't seen like the whole picture yet. But we Chicago will give you
White
thoughts.
Sox. Pick number one, Rock Chulowski.
Don't do that.
Landon Tomei, comp round 34th. Cole Prosek at 41. Joey Volchko at 77. Eric Segura at 105 in the fourth round. I love this draft. The first three players here, I think you can make cases to me that they're all first round talents, and you can do that pretty convincingly or pretty easily to me. I like not getting creative at number one in a class where I think there's a clear number one overall player in Rock Chulowski. Irrelevant to me if you think like this is maybe not the most ideal profile for you right now. If it doesn't fit your timeline, like I think Rock does. I wouldn't be bothered if he didn't. I think he's just the best player in the class and they took him first overall. So kudos to the White Sox for that. I really like the offensive profiles of both Landon Tomei and Cole Prosek. Some of the better pure hitters in the high school class. Prosek, the power is really exciting. Landon Tomei, the chance to stick in the middle of the infield is really exciting. I wish Cole Prosek was announced as a catcher.
Yeah.
Because I'm like very intrigued by that possibility. But if they just want to say, hey, we want you to just go hit, I understand that too.
And I'll even say Volchko at 77 is like, okay, you're taking a chance on an interesting arm.
I actually was going to say, I think their last two picks, the two arms, Joey Volchko and Eric Segura, were in that like really sneaky great pick category that we had today. Mm-hmm. Volchko, and we've said this at Baseball America for a long time, but Joey Volchko is one of those guys where it's like if it clicks yes. and the strikes are there and you refine the fastball a little bit more, which I still think is kind of ahead of him, mm-hmm. despite the velocity that it possesses. This is somebody who has as good an arsenal as anybody in this draft class. The capacity to spin the baseball is outstanding. When we saw him in the College World Series, I feel like that was a really good look at what mm-hmm. Joey Volchko could be. Right. And there have been flashes of that throughout this season, which was not the case prior. And Eric Segura, I actually think Eric Segura could be one of the more overlooked names in this class. It's great angles. There's also spin capacity there. He was successful as a starter at Oregon State. He's also very successful out of the bullpen. I think it's the kind of stuff that would move quickly if it were to be right. a bullpen profile. So those are two guys who I think you kind of have a lot of room to shape and mold. But at the same time, they bring right. proven production at the very high level of college baseball.
I always thought Joey Volchko reminded me of Brody Brecht, and they get him here at pick 77, whereas Brecht, the Rockies had to take him at the 38th pick. So just the risk factors with Volchko, I'm much more comfortable with them in the third round.
Agreed.
Okay, so I think we need to talk people off the ledge here a little bit, because there seems
Reds
to be
fans seem to be
Reds fans seem to hate their draft in a way that I've got to be honest, I don't understand. Like, Okay, so let me just start
with like
so,
elite tools.
So it's Justin LeBron, Eric Becker, Mulivai, Levo, Ty Horn, Ethan Norby. What I would say is it seems like that Reds fans seem to think, and I don't know why, I'll be honest with you, like that there was going to be money saved from these first picks to spend on other guys. Justin LeBron at that pick at 18 is not a money saving pick in any way. You're not like that's
full price.
That's where we had him ranked 19th.
Yep.
This is where we expect him to go. Eric Becker at 58
also
is where we expected him to go.
Don't tell me that fans are now becoming in love with money saving picks early, right? But, like playing it straight up.
But I think the Reds this is a straight up draft to me.
Well, I think the Reds have done this in the past. They've been willing to go straight up. They've been willing to pay guys down early. They don't jump out to me as a team that's like, oh, we've got to save early so we can get cute later. No, this is a draft, like you said, it's a straight up draft.
Ethan Norby at 122 is a good pick.
Excellent value. Great value. And again, let's just circle back to Justin LeBron. If you are like afraid of Justin LeBron, I understand it. But Justin LeBron at pick 18 is one of the better values you could have had in this year's draft, just in terms of upside potential. If Justin LeBron hits, he is a game-changing franchise-type prospect. He is a dynamic elite runner. He has tremendous bat speed. He can rocket the ball out of a park with shocking ease for his size and his frame. If you're worried that his defense this spring, you don't think he's a shortstop, I think that's crazy because he is such a smooth mover defensively, and he has been like a very good defensive shortstop. I think it's probably just a case where there's some draftitis going on. He was struggling early.
Exceptional base runner, too.
He takes that to the field. Exceptional base runner. I think his success rate is 66 for 68 on the bases for his career is pretty elite. I think this is one of the more.
And by the way, Eric Becker at 58, if you'd have taken him at 18, I'd have been like, that's too early. But at 58, that's a.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say on the LeBron point, if you're concerned about LeBron's defense, fine, because statistically speaking, not the best year. And I can see why somebody who maybe didn't watch every rep of him at shortstop mm-hmm. would be, mildly concerned about the defense. Let's give it to you. You can throw that guy in center field and he's going to go and be successful. Like, this is somebody who's going to have exceptional range to the alleys. He has a strong arm. I would argue it's a plus arm right now, even with all of the concerns defensively. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I mean, like, I think at that range in this draft where there was so much uncertainty after 6 to 8, like, you really could have done anything.
Take a shot.
Give me the best athlete in the class who is going to play a premium position either way, who has a strong arm, who's done it in spurts and flashes throughout his college career. And if it doesn't work out, I mean, I hate to break it to you, but like in that range, there's going to be a lot of dudes who don't go perfectly. And so I think that the upside swing there is really justified.
I agree.
Yeah. So again, when you say not why no high school guys, I will also say Justin LeBron is an upside play. He's not a high school player.
I guess like the question would be like, do you want high schoolers just for the sake of drafting from high school, or do you want upside? In which case, LeBron covers that for the entirety of your draft, I would think. So, yeah, hopefully Reds fans feel a little bit better about their draft after us chatting about it for a bit.
Carlos has already written this story.
How many
players picked today you think will get in the next top 100?
Oh, yeah. I can pull it up just to refresh my
mind. I'll answer it for you. 10.
Yeah, JJ has
10-ish. 10-ish. I'll give you also the weirdest version of that is that Ian's also here, but we can only fit 3 people on the couch. Ian across us. But Ian does the Rays, and I'm just like, Taj Marshall, that's a great pick for the Rays. And they were like, you realize that he might be 10th on their top 10 because they have like 8 or 9 guys in the top 100. And we don't think Marshawn's going to be generally
our ballpark.
Generally, we have 10 to 13 our initial jump on. That's the range. So
I think, 10 players, Rock Chulowski, Grady Emerson, Vaughn Lackey, no doubters. I think all those guys are going to rank in the top 30 or close to it if Vaughn is not there. I think Jackson Flora, Jacob Lombard, Eric Booth Jr., they're all going to be somewhere in the middle of the top 100. The other guys I think should jump in right away are Ryder Helfrick, Drew Burris, Tyler Bell, Derek Curiel. I think all of those have really strong cases. Currently, the next 4 that I think have cases, but maybe I wouldn't expect them to be on there or wouldn't guarantee that they would be on there, are Chris Hacopian, Ace Reese, Sawyer Strohsnyder, and AJ Gracia. We do fold in draft capital into our discussions on like what draft players are going to be added. So maybe that'll add some wrinkles to it as well. Like maybe if we were already borderline on Strohsider and because of the slide, we'd be less inclined to get him on there. But I think those are kind of where the starting points are going to be for these players.
What do you think of Carson Bowman at 29?
I love that pick.
Yeah, let me pull up who actually drafted him, 29, Giants. Giants at 29. Yeah. I like that pick too. I think Bowman, and this is after taking Jackson Flora, so you maybe wound up with the best college pitcher in the draft, and if you wanted to make a case for Carson Bowman as the best high school player.
Okay, let me ask that question. What does Carson Bowman have to do to be the best
high school? I think he basically just needed to come out with bigger fastball velocity than he did this spring. That was the specific question scouts had for him. It was kind of the reason they were a little bit disappointed, because Carson Bowman on our preseason high school All-American balloting, he was one of only two players who were unanimous first team, which I think says a lot about where the scouts viewed you entering the year. The only other player who got that honor was Grady Emerson. And then he just didn't throw quite as hard. And I don't know that it's like a huge question for velocity, but it was enough to kind of get him out of the consensus top high school pitching range. But it's elite secondaries, elite feel for secondaries, good frame. I mean, tremendous command and track record. They took Caden Wachter in the second round, who has a lot of other, like the starting pitching profiles they have here in their first three picks are really exciting.
Even their fifth pick.
Yeah, Carlos Martinez out of Hofstra at 118. And then you're getting Peyton Bonds, who's a really exciting athlete.
Tool.
We love Peyton Bonds.
Familiar name for the area, too. Yes. All right. Let's see what else we got here.
We got a lot.
We do.
We also have a lot of people watching, which is really cool. So thank you guys for hanging out and do enjoying that Bradley the draft Snyder with us. And,
do that, Bradley. Yeah.
That's a good one. Does the Rockies drafting two catchers mean they could be fine trading Hunter Goodman?
Okay, and let's also say with this, I know we have another question saying thoughts on Rockies draft. We'll roll both of those into this.
Yep.
This is kind of giving us eventually we'll get through almost all the teams if we get all the questions, you know, like, but eventually we have to eat too, but okay. Rockies. Let's talk about the Rockies draft. So obviously they go Tyler Bell, Daniel Jackson, Logan Redmond, Jack Tilly.
Congrats. Congrats, Jacob.
It's my guy.
Ben Davis, Mississippi State right-hander in the fourth round. But okay. So Carlos, I'll take the easy one. No, this does not. You don't take catchers now and say, oh, you're going to trade your all-star catcher because you've got two guys who down the road could reach the majors. In the best case scenario, catchers do not move fast through the minors. In the best case scenario, Hunter Goodman will have reached free agency. Like, he'll either be extended or he'll be a free agent before Jackson and Jack Natilly arrive, because catchers have to develop a lot, like from a standpoint of working with pitchers, in addition to all the things that amateur players have for college, non-professional, you know, big affiliate players. Got to change my wording now. These players are not amateurs. They're making good money in college in a lot of cases. But they have to adjust with bats, all those things. But then catcher has to adjust to workload, to many other things as well. So it's not usually a fast track. And so I would say with that, that's not a – okay. Let's start with Jacob. Give us why you are excited about the second catcher.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jack Natilly kind of brings everything to the table that you could be looking for in a modern catcher. There's strength in the swing. It's above average exit velocities. He is a game power guy, but he can really hit too, which I think is kind of the big separator here. Like, if you look at a guy like Carson Tinney, and this is the knock I had on him personally, coming into the draft, I think some of the swing decisions and just the overall aggression gets him at times and comes back to bite him. We didn't see that a whole lot with Jack Natilly this year. Like, they were really good swing decisions. The ability to make contact and feel for hitting in the zone is strong. And I do think that the arm gives him kind of a foundational tool as he transitions into professional catching. There's work to do as a receiver and blocker, but I don't think that there's anybody in this class, you know, maybe save for a couple of guys who don't need some real refinement behind the plate. And like I said, he is a plus thrower. So, interesting pick. I mean, I think that the value at 76th overall is really high.
I agree.
That's the range that I would want that to happen.
If you took Jack Natilly at 37, where they took Daniel Jackson,
not good.
I was about to say, I thought you would still like it.
No, I think it would be a little high. I think it would be a little bit high. Do I think that 76 is, I think 76 is like a steal. Like, right. you're getting into like really good territory. But if you took him in the 50s, I think that that'd be very appropriate.
The other value I really like in this draft is Logan Redmond, 38. If he was healthy, if he didn't have any arm fatigue down the stretch, and we were talking about him going where Tyler Bell went, 10th overall. Like,
yep.
I don't really think that would have been that shocking, but that helped him, or not helped him. It caused him to slide down and helped the Rockies maybe to get him at pick 30.
I want to give, I think it was Jeff Ponce. I want to give him credit for this, making the point. So Tyler Bell, I would say that that's the one that we would say it's a little bit more where he went for the Rockies is a little bit more scary. Now, he's within the rankings range of where we anticipated and where kind of his overall. But, and you know, when we dove into Tyler Bell, like the offensive profile has some concerns to it, especially breaking balls and all. And one thing about the Rockies, if you're in Coors Field, it is hard to throw breaking balls in Coors Field. Like they're not as good. They're not as effective. So that may help him a little bit.
I was maybe hoping to see get a feel for if the Rockies had like a specific philosophy change here in this draft because of the changes they've had in their organization. I don't know that I feel like there definitely is one here. A lot of these offensive profiles are pretty disparate. They're fairly different to me. So I don't know. Maybe we'll get a better feel for that tomorrow with them.
So yeah, keep going. What are the thoughts on the three high school guys the Braves drafted? And this becomes also our plus talk about the Braves.
The Braves draft, I thought, was a lot of fun. I know, at the top, if Ben Badler was here, he'd be raving about the A.J. Gracia pick. He thought he should go in this range at 9 overall. He really likes the hit-power combo. Carter Beck, interesting pick at 26. I think we were kind of joking earlier this year, how high can you really go in the staff drafts? I jumped him high and
answer very high.
Yeah, he could go very high.
I think we had him 93 and we had bumped him up to 93, but we could have bumped him up more.
We bumped him up to 68.
68.
No, 68. There was definitely a feel that he could jump up the board. Mm-hmm. I think if you told me at any point throughout the year that Carter Beck, the undersized corner outfielder from Indiana State, was going to be a first round top 30 pick, right, I think I would have laughed a little bit. But as far as data plays go in this draft, yes, off top of your head, how many are better? Caden Ferraro, maybe?
He's one. And then after that,
that's kind of it.
Run out of it quickly.
Yeah, it's like elite contact. There's strength. It's a compact, smaller body, compact, smaller swing. But it is real power, real contact. 92% in zone, which is elite.
This feels like just such a Braves draft to me because they are a team that will go under slot early and push savings later. They'll take high school profiles. They'll take multi-sport athletes. Carter Beck's multi-sport background is really fun to me. And the Carter Beck, this is why you can't get too overboard and criticizing picks immediately because you don't know what's coming next. But Carter Beck in this range makes a ton of sense when you look at Caden McCarthy in the second round.
Yes.
Jensen Hirschkorn in the third round, who might be one of my favorite values of the entire first day of the draft. And then another shot on a big upside high school right-hander in Cole Dennis in the fourth round. At 112, I love the Jensen Hirschkorn pick at 84.
So just explain that to someone who's maybe not as plugged into how this worked. This is a key part of this is don't, when you see a first pick and it's because we're going to get to the Red Sox draft eventually, I'm sure, and this will be a stronger version of this. But when you get to the first pick and you see something that's kind of shocking, sometimes there's a follow-up to it. In this case with the Braves, not that Gracia was he wasn't a first-round pick or anything, but these were guys, I would say with Gracia and Beck, most likely, Carlos, isn't it, that there will be money savings there that allowed them to pay,
right,
the bonuses they need to pay for the high school arms.
Yeah, correct. I don't know how much Gracia will be. I think he's generally in a range that makes sense for him, but a lot of these first-round players in general are underslot guys in some capacity. Carter Beck, I imagine, is some savings. If Caden McCarthy and Jensen Hirschkorn are not significant overslot deals or big money picks there, I'd be a little surprised. And then we'll see how they attack rounds 5 to 10. Is it going to be the case where they've already created the savings to sign those players? Will they need to create some more with some seniors or just more signable players later on? We'll have to wait and see about that. But I really like this draft class for Atlanta, and I think Atlanta has done a really nice job later in the draft in recent years. I mean, one of the better players in the minor leagues right now is a great example of that. So I guess we'll see what they do this year in round 20. Circle back after that.
If it's a Canadian outfielder, I like it. Okay, so did Mason Edwards fall, or was this always his range? Good question.
I have a suspicion that this was always his range. I know that there was word late from a number of different teams that he was somebody who maybe would be flying up the board. But at the end of the day, I think some of the things that you and I actually talked about on the college podcast way earlier in the season about Mason Edwards, some of the concerns that you and I had, ended up being kind of what pushed him down the board. It is a very light fastball for all the things that are very good about him. And on top of that, I think that the control is poor. So there's major reliever risk here. And I think that that's something that teams have long recognized, but it's reliever risk with somebody who does have a lighter fastball is very breaking ball reliant. And that's kind of a scary demographic, even as a left-hander that had a lot of success in college. So I would imagine that that's what pushed him down the board.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's that crazy of a fall relative to where we had him ranked and maybe some of the buzz that was going into the draft.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
This
one is surprising to me because we wrote about it. I'd heard buzz he could go in a pretty good spot. I think we had him mocked in the late teens. I even thought like he could go even earlier than that. But like all those questions that Jacob laid out, I think are real questions for the profile. I don't know. You said I feel like he has a decent chance to start. I don't know if the control I would say is poor with him, but it definitely is not like it is worse than you would expect for a player who dominated like he did this spring. So maybe the control, maybe the fastball velocity. I know Lance was talking about like even his secondary shapes that were very effective in college. You don't see a lot of those in pro ball having some success. So maybe some of that underlying analytical pitch data was also maybe pushing against him. But I think at 47, even if Mason Edwards is not like my ideal flavor of a college pitching profile for what he did this year,
the value is great.
I think it's really good. Drew Burris at 7 for the A's. I don't know if you even mentioned it. Mason Edwards went 87 or went to the A's in the 47th with the 47th overall pick. Sorry. Putting together words at this stage for me is difficult. And then they rounded out with Gabe Gackle, who I really like, Jacob Duden, who Jacob really likes, and Roman Martin, who I also really
I'm going to put me on the Duden group too. If he had not been hurt this year, I think
you don't get with him being hurt,
you don't get him in the third round, I think, if he's not hurt. So, yeah.
This is a good one.
Very college-heavy draft for the A's.
Okay. Can you read that?
Did Daniel Cuvée's injury keep him from being drafted on the first day, or do you think he might just go back to Miami? Both.
Right. I would say injury, but also there's always been defensive questions, have there not?
Yes. I think it's a right first baseman at the end of the day. He does have a big arm. The footwork is well below average at this point. He's not a very good mover. Obviously, when you are not a good mover in the first place and then you hurt your back, those things tend to not lead to improvement. And I also just think that back to the theme that we discussed at the top of the show, it was kind of hit tool day. Like the question today was, can you hit reliably? And I don't know that Daniel Cuvée is in the reliable hit tool category. Awesome power, major power, maybe some of the best raw in this entire class. But I think the hit tool questions and the injury were things that were limiting.
Yeah, I agree. If you look at our best available board, there are a couple college players we have at the top. We've got guys like Will Gasparino, Garrett Wright, Ryan Marrone, and then Daniel Cuvée. So I do think he's one of the better available college players. It's interesting that we can even have the conversation about like colleges being competitive enough to start getting their players back because they have the financial muscle to throw it out, throw it around.
Okay. I'll plug if you're looking for draft content. If you go over to baseballamerica.com right now, I just wrote a story about some of the challenges that are being presented to pro teams when it comes to signability and how much you do have to kind of cough up. And to the point that we were talking about with Carter Beck, there is kind of a new flavor to the overslot, underslot game that teams are playing, because I think that the level of financial offer that's required is a little bit different than it used to be.
We'll take a couple more questions and wrap it because we do need to get some food. But I do know we had multiple people asking about the Cardinals draft, so I did want to tee that up. For
Cardinals draft, Trevor Condon going first overall. I think it was the 13th pick. Let me pull up their whole draft board here. Okay, got it. Yeah, the Cardinals had so many picks this year. They had an extra pick after the first where they took Tegan Kuhns to follow up that.
Which, by the way, a great spot for Tegan Kuhns.
Agreed. Rocco Maniscalco in the second, one of the more exciting athletes in the class. Then Andrew Williamson, Dawson Montessa, Caden Ferraro, and D. Kennedy to round it out. Again, I
Caden Ferraro, D. Kennedy, like you have the analytics darling, and then you have the traditional stats performer darling.
Right. This does feel like a fairly straight up draft to me so far. I like Caden Ferraro in the third round more than I would have liked it if he went higher than that.
I was worried he was going to go higher than that. Yeah.
Because I think the batted ball data and the offensive profile, Jacob has been all over this one for a long time as a guy who could go in this range. So kudos to him for nailing that. I do wonder where he's going to play defensively.
Nowhere.
Maybe invert that entire question for Rocco Maniscalco. I think he is a dynamic
shortstop. I know where he's going to play.
An elite defender. We know he's going to play shortstop. The one, we didn't get to talk about this in the broadcast, but the one that's interesting to me, and I'm not sure if you guys view it differently, but I've heard he's actually a really good catcher, which you normally don't see a shortstop like that and think, oh, let's think about moving him to catcher. But like, I'm fascinated by all the catcher conversions this year. Condon, I think, fits on talent. I really love Coons at 32 as well. If someone took Coons 15 to 20, I would have liked the pick. I think there's a lot more that could be gotten out of taking Coons at the next level. I really love the delivery and the pitch mix he has. I don't know. Any other players you guys like in this range or thoughts?
Again, Coons, I just thought where you got where they got him. I think that there's a real potential there. I don't feel like that we've even seen, like, I think there's more to come with Tegan Coons as far as the way he's used, pitch selection, all that.
I actually think that he might be the best example in this class of now stuff mixed with projectability. Like, I don't know that anybody has that combo quite like Tegan Coons has. Like, he's a really good strike thrower, and the stuff is super advanced. Plus, he's very thin.
You have, like, very obvious questions about almost every pitcher in the college ranks, I guess outside of Jackson Flora, maybe, who's a clear top guy. And Tegan Coons, he's very well-rounded,
I just think that that's like a really good fit for that org too. Yeah. The other one that I would shout out is Andrew Williamson. I think that's a really good pick. That's an outfielder who is going to be probably a corner, which is fine. Like, I don't necessarily think that everybody has to be a center fielder to extract value, but he can hit fastballs as well as anybody in this class. And obviously that's becoming increasingly important.
Okay. Like I said, apologies to everyone, but we do have to get some food at some point. It's been a very long day and sleep, but okay. I'll start and kind of to give you all been to think, but it doesn't have to be best draft. It's, again, the draft's not over yet. But what's a draft you like so far? I'll start and say, because we just haven't, I'm also going to use this because we haven't really talked about it yet. The Rays draft, they're picking two. Again, much as we said at three, they didn't get cute. Rochelowski was off the board. They went Grady Emerson. That's our number two guy on our board. That's a guy who you're, again, not a shock also for the Rays. The Rays love to draft first round high school shortstops. They've done it a lot. You know, if you look at the list of top 50 pick shortstops, high school shortstops they've taken, there are a number of them. But beyond that, and this is, I feel like it's kind of like the Jacob Rudner draft. So Taj Marshan goes 33.
Which, by the way, I'm very happy that one happened because I feel like we've been banging the drum on Taj Marshan going 33 for a while. So it was nice to see that come across.
Then Ben Blair at 49. Which
I made an audible noise when they selected him. So that,
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I was very excited about that.
Yeah.
Okay, and then Gavin Geese at 85, who was a guy who we had, you know, some heat, we'd heard there was helium on, and then Colin Bland at 113, the again, so they went very high school heavy, four high schoolers out of five picks. I would say Bland was probably the one who I would say the most surprising to me, but this is the team I say that, you know, they don't mind being surprising. If they see something they like, they're going to take, you know, like I would say the Xavier Isaac pick a few years ago is an example of a guy who I would say there are a lot of teams had a little lower on their board because of profile and also because he'd been hurt, but they absolutely didn't, you know, didn't have a problem taking him.
Right.
Colin Bland was, I know, a combine guy who really kind of stood out. But I do want to kind of go back to, like, you got Grady Emerson. Like, that's, I mean, that's a good place to start. You got a dude who could absolutely be a stud hitter, and that's never a bad place to start. And the Rays were already one of our best farm systems in baseball. They got a lot better today.
Yeah. You have one, Jacob? Or you want me to go?
Yeah, I actually think, is it like my favorite class? I'm not 100% sure yet. Like, I don't know that I've decided officially what my favorite class is from tonight so far. But I do think that the Angels' strategy changes and what they did tonight was really productive. Like, I think that Grindlinger fits what they're trying to do. I think that it might usher in a little bit of a different era, depending on, you know, we don't know yet who's going to be the new general manager of the Angels, but I do think that this is a good tone setter for what could come next. And I think that they prioritize guys in the right order. Like Grindlinger, where he went, I thought was really good for them.
Yep.
I think Advíncula at 45 overall was
great value.
Really great value. I think that Grahovic, like JJ said earlier, was somebody that if at the beginning of the year you said he was going to go in the first round, I would have totally bought that. And then Lujo, I've kind of been banging the Lujo drum for a while as somebody who could be underrated. I think he has a chance to stick in center field, and I really do like the contact skills, especially against velocity. So it's just a good draft.
Yeah. I was torn here. Most interesting, like Pittsburgh, I feel like with the Kurriel pick at the top would be hard for me to pick against, but we've talked about Kurriel a lot here.
Surprised you're not
the one that's more interesting to me, I think, is the Guardians, because I really like the fit of the first two pitchers they took here. They drafted Liam Peterson with their first round pick at 19. And then in the second round, they got Logan Schmidt at pick 59. We kind of came into this thinking that Logan Schmidt's range would be a little bit more volatile than maybe the talent warranted. I think the Guardians are the beneficiaries of that, because if you told me that Logan Schmidt was an equivalent talent straight up to Liam Peterson, that makes a lot of sense to me. I also think Liam Peterson maybe has some of the best pure stuff in the class, maybe the best slider, one of the better changeups. And the Guardians are a team that does a great job with pitching development. So I think this is just going to be a great environment for him on and off the field. I think the Guardians do a really good job with their like specific player development paths. And then Trey Broussard in the third, I like that pick. I think that's a fair range for him. I think the same for Cade Lewis. Really, for me, the first two pitchers here are carrying a lot of the weight and the intrigue. Seeing what Liam Peterson looks like 2 years after being with the Guardians.
I actually will stick my neck out a little bit on that pick and say that I thought that was the pick of the day. The fact that they got Liam Peterson down at 19, just with the capacity that's there, just the stuff is really, really good. Like you just said, I think that you can make an argument that he is second to none in the stuff category. And I think developmentally, it's just been kind of a weird go for him in college. Like this could be somebody who in this draft could benefit as much as anybody from pro instruction and what that process entails in terms of refining the stuff, in terms of refining the arsenal, in terms of just kind of developing like the player and the competitor. I think that he's somebody who takes off in a big way in pro ball. And so I love that pick for them.
So cool. To just give you a little bit of promo, check out baseballamerica.com. We have analysis of every first round pick from the battler. We have, hopefully, if the sync worked right, we have reports on every pick up on the site. Also good that we don't have to go into the night having write up failures. They're already all there. And then obviously, I would say the most important thing, though, is tomorrow's day two of the draft. It'll be going on all day, 11:30 to 7:30. And if you want to know about the players who are getting picked, you need to be at baseballamerica.com. We work all year to do the reporting, to see the players, to write them all up so that when these players get picked, I cannot tell you that we're going to have reports for all 600 and some picks. It is my dream one day. But I will tell you this. I promise you this. We will have reports for everyone in the top 10 rounds. We do that every year. And then we'll have reports for many of the players and after the 10th round, 11th round and on as well. So, yeah, it doesn't just because it gets to pick 75, 110, 205. It's not over. You want to know what those players are for your team. We're going to tell you. But also, there's so much more about it over at baseballamerica.com. Jacob, like I said, Jacob wrote about the about signability. If you're wondering why there's so many players who withdrew from the draft this year, we have a piece explaining that. If you thought that the draft today kind of, to be honest, like had some issues, like the hammering that was going on during round 2, 3, and 4, I wrote a column about that, how as much as we love the draft, there were some issues today and, Brock Chalewski and things like that, that you just don't want to see happen. So there's all that. I will say it will not be Carlos, but Jacob and I may try to do this again tomorrow night. I mean, we've got 2,500 people watching as we do this right now. I mean, we really do appreciate that.
Yeah. And also just big thank you to the Baseball America subscribers and supporters. And even if you don't subscribe, but you consume the content, you listen to the podcast or the YouTube videos, like this is kind of Super Bowl day for us. I know like my adrenaline is still,
I can feel it's like draining off.
Yeah, it's coming off now, but like this is one of the biggest days of the year for us, maybe the biggest day of the year for us. Jacob puts in so much work on all the college seniors, the college reports. Like I'm super excited for the product that we had this year in terms of our coverage. Ben doing all of our high school stuff, Jacob getting into the it's late for me. Okay, yeah. I'm getting here. Yeah. Jeff Ponson.
This is why we're wrapping up. Carlos will be stuff. We'll be gibberish in about 10 minutes.
JJ helping drive this ship and all the guys who are doing pro stuff while we get to focus on the draft. It really does mean a lot to us that you guys let us do this full time year round because we couldn't do it without
and,
you.
And so by the way,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, from that standpoint, like, yes, this is what we great appreciation to our Baseball America subscribers. But I do want to say also, if you're watching this on YouTube, a lot of people watch us on YouTube, watch us, but you don't subscribe. Subscribe. Because when you subscribe, that helps it put it into the feeds of other people. So, and again, if you're in a fantasy league and you don't want them to know, come on, share the love.
And I have one more thing just to add before we sign off of this, and that is that this guy is the best at what he does too. So if you're looking for the best draft content on the planet, right here, Carlos Collazo. I mean, you just an unbelievable amount of stuff that you've done today. So
thank you.
The best in the business, and it really is true. Like, if you want the best draft coverage, it's at Baseball America, and it's largely. And, because of him.
The whole team.
But I will say this, like, this is also what we love to doing what we do. Last night, it's 11 o'clock at night or so, and Jacob is serving up senior signs, not telling us about them, and saying, where do you think this guy should rank on the top 100? And we got it.
It's out there.
I'll say, Ian and I were getting them right, too. We're like, oh, about 65, 61, 65. Okay, cool. Oh, this is why he's way better. Okay, yeah, he's 10. Okay, cool. Oh, this guy's the best I've seen. Yeah, he's 3. Okay, yeah. So it went, we're just doing that because that's what we do. So for Carlos Collazo. For Jacob Brunner, I'm JJ Cooper. This is the Baseball America Draft Live Show. So long, everybody.